Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. Okay, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper, Carlton Eastlake. And the name of the book is Monkey Business. Hello, Carlton. Carlton, where are you? Oh boy, we had him for a minute. All right, we'll get him back. He's a little bit late, but we keep trying because I love this book. I will tell you, it is funny. You know, it is about, of course, it is about a Hollywood writer. So I actually relate very well to this book and all the ups and downs of life for a Hollywood writer. It is a fascinating thing, and I'm just so happy. When I get a book about Hollywood, I always sort of get this momentary glimpse at what life was like there. And so I always... I get a kick out of this book. When I was there in Hollywood a long time ago, I met a lot of people that are characters in this book, let me say. So it was lots of fun, and I'm hoping that Carlton, is Carlton on? Are we? I hope so, because I really need him. I need a laugh. And I got a lot of laughs from this book. The cover of this book is one of my favorites. It's just so clever. You know, I don't know where he is. I hope he didn't sleep late. You know, we've had that problem before. We've had a couple of, I think we've had about three times. That's why I stopped calling people, because I said, you have to call us because you have to wake up. Is Carlton on? Where's Carlton? We could have the next book, Where's Carlton? Okay, hello, Carlton, are you there?
I am here, hi.
Well, finally, Carlton, I'm so happy. I'm so happy. I was afraid for a moment that you were just some five-star hotel, you know, this famous Carlton on Eastlake. And you're not real, but you're real. You are real.
I think we can blame AT&T. They're having troubles on the hill today.
Okay, well, you know, and of course, it's also California, and you could be sleeping late. We've had that happen several times, including it was hard to get Debbie Reynolds on my program because she told me one day, I told her what time the program was, and she said, but I'm not awake. I wrote a script for Debbie Reynolds. That's why I threw that in, just, you know,
I never sleep.
Okay, that's good. Carlton, Carlton, Carlton. It's like Billy, 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 Willy, Willy, Willy in this book. You are clever. You are smart. What sometimes people don't understand, and I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to let you do the talking because I don't have, you know, you lost a few minutes here. People don't realize how very smart script writers are because they look at you based on the scripts you've written. So many of them are so bad. But script writers actually are, I've always found, are very, very smart. We've read a lot. We know a lot. We've read a lot of books. We're usually historians and psychologists, and we're really smart people. Of course, then we have to put it all down on paper, and sometimes we don't get to use a lot of words. But you are smart, and I was happy that you got to throw in a lot of your smarts here. You know, I really appreciated all of the things that you threw in here, like Mao snuffing Lin Bao. How many times in a book does an author have a chance to throw that in? Say, look at me. I'm smart. Really, I am. I mean, don't judge me by those words, the characters. So tell us about tell us about this book. It's funny. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And of course it landed up also that the location was here in Florida in my backyard, and I've done location shooting here, so I know all about it.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned how maybe we're smarter than the scripts, because of course the book really, in part, details the descending misery and and suppressed rage of a screenwriter whose script is slowly being destroyed by his producers and made not only more dumb, but also more violent and despicable draft by draft.
I'm sorry, it makes me laugh. just remembering.
Well, you know, you have to laugh or cry when that process happens. And you're creative like we are, and this machine is grinding up our material.
Oh, it does. Oh, it's, but you do have to laugh about it.
Oh, yes, you do. So anyway, the book, I mean, for people who are listening to us, the book is about a screenwriter on location, TV writer on location in Florida. He's young, and he is being really oppressed and bullied by two very powerful executive producers. And they take him to when we first meet him, he is standing in the ruins of a fire that has destroyed a nightclub, and he is the prime suspect for the office. He explains to us he got into this fix because two really horrible producers took him to that nightclub, a very high-end strip club, and tried to humiliate him or bully him by hiring a dancer. But she let him off to a private room and told him that she is really an anthropologist searching for rational life. And then she started interviewing him about creativity and the role that fantasy plays in everyday life, and the role that we play in the media in shaping people's lives.
Also
asking about these really horrible producers. And so, of course, the screenwriter instantly falls in love with her. She is so smart. And it's some enchanted evening, you know. It's My Fair Lady. It's love at first sight. And then he begins to suspect, as he tries to get her to reciprocate, and she gives him a reading list and starts doing things. He begins to suspect that she's staging events that seem natural, but actually are aimed and under her control and aimed at his producers and aimed at him to teach them some lessons that they need to learn. And that's the start of the book. And how he gets out of it, you got to read the book.
I love it. I love it. You know, Sue Grafton once told, you know, Sue Grafton was, of course, was involved briefly in script writing in Hollywood, too. And
an amazing writer.
Oh, yeah. And she said to me one time, oh, gosh, did we really have to deal with these people? But
well, you know, I mean, the problem in Hollywood, and I've used this metaphor before, but Hollywood is not the Olympics with the 100-meter dash, and, you know, you start the stopwatch, and it's objective. Hollywood is ice dancing. It's all subjective. Ultimately, there are audience numbers, but then even attributing who is responsible, you know, what worked and drew the audience or scared them away is subjective. So people who are fast-talking con men who have a lust for power in the money that you can make in Hollywood very often infiltrate the process and make life terrible for everybody else. And so this book in part is about that, and of course in part about the miseries of really true and instant love at first sight and a lot else that I think we've all experienced that way.
Oh, it's clever. It's smart. You've done... I got such a kick out of so many things. You know, I love that you've introduced this whole thing. You know, you're using big words.
Chairman Mao as the ultimate guy with power who manages to ruin everything, because Mao pretty much ruined the lives of a billion people and killed quite a few of them. But the personality is not much different than a bad producer on a show that has aggregated all this power to protect his ego and also to prey upon everybody else, but actually not produce a workable show.
Well, of course, you've introduced this idea of limerence. Which,
yes.
Oh, I thought that's good. That's good.
That readers have already, even though the book launched this week, readers have already told me that reading about that has changed their life. About 75% of the population experiences limerence, which is that incapacitating, you know, preoccupation with hoping someone else loves you, that you will fall in love, usually at first sight, or very soon after meeting the person, and you're really fixated on them and cannot do your work, cannot lead the rest of your life. And the psychologist coined the term, Dorothy Tenoff, when she surveyed this, because psychology cannot really deal with love, even today, has a terrible problem dealing with it. When she surveyed the population, she found about 75% reported that they've been incapacitated that way. And people do not talk about it. They keep it private for the most part. And they certainly hide it from the person they're in love with. And yet it is the engine that you see in almost every love story, the engine that you certainly see on Broadway, and every classic Broadway song is written about. And so this guy is suffering from that as he pursues this very beautiful, very bright, and very mysterious woman who seems to change her name every week.
As I read that, I was thinking, now, I don't know if you'll make a fortune from the book, but you could, you know, come out with a drug, because you can now do a television commercial. Are you suffering from limerence? Oh. What are the three symptoms? Yes. Okay. Infatuation. Yes, you've got that. Ah, crystallization. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You've got that. And soon you're going to be heading for deterioration. We have just the pill for you. Oh, yes. Carlton Eastlake. Not a five-star hotel, but Carlton Eastlake has discovered the pill for you. You're going to make a fortune.
I mean, I actually think that they had a teacher about limerence in high school, which certainly disrupted much of my high school life. And they don't teach about it. They at least had to sign this novel so people have a little bit of an orderly experience of it safely, vicariously, before they re-encounter it in real life, because it is so disruptive. And, you know, as you're joking quite insightfully, because it is a drug, it is a real process that's profound inside our mind. And you probably could make a drug that would trigger it and make a drug that would block it. And it'd be a race to see which drug made more money.
Yeah, well, you know, you could do both. You could write the script for the TV ad, one of those ads that I click off immediately. I have to be real fast. I click off all the medical ads. I don't know why they put all those medical ads, except to give my thumb some exercise.
Yeah, does anyone watch them? I mean, we speed through them.
Oh,
they've driven us to record everything so we can skip through them.
That's what I do. I record everything. I skip. That is off so fast. But I think you could make it as a script writer. You could make it very interesting. And I did.
Yeah.
Maybe even you could do it personally. You know, I'm not a doctor, but I am an expert in limerence.
Well, you know, in this book, of course, he spends quite a bit of time trying to avoid all sorts of obnoxious, you know, creation of obnoxious media, and also then gets stuck in this hotel room, very depressed and longing after this girl and consuming ever worse media as he sits there. So this really is sort of the universal experience.
It's so much fun reading about what a script writer goes through, just the mental process of, yes, having to deal with people telling you what to do and how to do it and why. It's an experience that people can discover simply by reading this book without actually going through the suffering.
You know, and they talk about that in the book, that the good role of media, the beneficial role of writing a novel or writing a good television show, is that people can learn, can experience emotionally, not learn intellectually, but have the emotional experience of doing something and have that experience safely, but sort of retune their life, reshape their own needs, their own emotions. And, you know, you're absolutely right. So that is the whole point of for me, that is the whole point of writing and reading novels. It's not just to have a pure, fun adventure, though. Hopefully this novel gives that to you. I mean, they're cruising up the space coast with champagne and watching rocket launches, but it also does give you real substance, and that's what I always tried to do on television when I had the power to do it, and that's what I try to do in this novel, too. So it's a full meal, not just, you know, candy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, as somebody, I had three of my spec scripts optioned, and they appeared in the Hollywood Reporter, and I was young, and I believe they're still turning around out there. But actually, one of them was optioned three times.
Yeah,
so, you know, in those days, they were optioned three times, and so I had money, but I am on the west coast of Florida instead of the west coast of Hollywood, probably because I talked back to people a lot. Some of these.
You do not want to talk back to Chairman Mao. That's part of the appearance of Mao in this novel when he, you know, this anthropologist assigns him the biography of Mao to read because she thinks dealing with these producers, he really ought to be clued in how these guys operate, and Mao is the best example. Yeah, you do not want to talk back to them. And of course, as you saw, there are scenes where he doesn't talk back to them. He's accused of talking back to them because he says nothing. So they assume that he's suppressing talking back and attack him anyway.
Oh, it's so good. I enjoyed the book so much on so many levels. So you came actually to Florida. You came out of Hollywood and you came over to Florida, you know, and actually visited us.
Oh yeah, no, I mean I lived in Florida off and on. I produced. I was co-exec producer of a very expensive television show in Florida at Universal Studios. Sequest, which was Spielberg's first really big budget television show. And so I was co-exec, and I would rotate down to cover things. I was not living there full-time in a hotel like this character, though that certainly could have happened. And although none of these events particularly happened on that shoot, though, that was lovely. I mean, I could have set this in other places that I had shot, like in Paris or Vancouver or Sydney, Australia, but Florida was the most pleasant place to set it, exotic and yet accessible to the audience, and so that's why I picked Florida, since I was familiar with it from shooting there.
And also now, when they option the book, right?
Yes.
Now, finally, I think what you did here, you have a great opening scene. So I think it's just perfect for... Well, we're going to get you on streaming video, right?
I don't know. Are we?
I think so. I think we'll go ahead and try to push it because, you know, after all, I think that, you know, you deserve it. After all of this time, I think you deserve to really have a major motion picture. I think this would be more fun on streaming video, something that actually a square that we'd want to click on because I think it will be fun.
I think it actually would be great streaming video, and as you know from reading the book, that if they did it, then they'd probably try to duplicate Florida in Australia's Gold Coast.
Yes, I was thinking about
how they managed to convince themselves to do that.
Well, it is so much fun to talk to you because, as I said, it brought back a lot of wonderful memories for me. We were in 2008. We had already. We were starting pre-production for the film that I wrote for Debbie Reynolds. It was going to be shot at Fantasy of Flight, Exit 44, on the way to Orlando. Of course, that's when the stock market crashed, and all of our investors crashed.
Oh, yeah.
And so everything went down the tubes in 2008. It was just tragic because, of course... it was written for her, you know, and she was here. She had been here for pre-production, and then we were going to start shooting in December. And then that horrible, horrible month where everything in the world collapsed. But anyway, you brought back a lot of fond memories for me with this book. It's called Monkey Business by Carlton Eastlake. And you have a website you want people to go to?
Oh, yes. It's Carlton Eastlake, so it's CARLETON. There's an E in the middle there, Eastlake, EASTLAKE, .com. Yeah, it has links around the world. You can buy this book really on any service anywhere in the world, and don't forget your independent bookstore.
Exactly. And anybody who who has Mao in his... I love it, because one of my favorite books is John Holliday's Mao book, so all of the clever stuff that you threw in there, you threw in a lot of your intelligence, all of that, all of those years of study paid off in this book, and I think it'll be a wonderful, wonderful. Let's get a streaming video going on this. I think it'll be lots of fun.
Fantastic.
Okay. Well, it's been a joy to talk to you, and I will always think of you if I ever if I get rich and then I decide to open a 5-star hotel. It's going to be called Carlton on Eastlake. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Take care now. It was great talking to you. Monkey business.
Thank you.
And Carlton's full of monkey business. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. What fun. Oh, I had so much fun reading this book. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. The days of, well, I can't tell you. Television production is actually so, so much fun. It when you're involved in it, you're having a ball. Of course, when you're out of it, you're out of it. Sometimes you get blacklisted in Hollywood, and it's really hard to get back. Anyway, oh my goodness, it's almost time. Big Ed's playing the music. Big Ed, I thank you so much, and I'm so happy we got Carlton. Say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed. He held on for Carlton. Everybody, bye-bye now.